wonderful the way it is, and it doesn't need to be covered. I read somewhere that natural sunlight, does that mean my time is up? natural sunlight actually provides filtration and UV, and actually makes healthier water than covering reservoirs. And so any way I can help, and cheaper, yes. so any way I can help uncover that process and keep the water the way it is, I would like to be part of that.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for coming. Appreciate it.
The next four are Tyson Terhar, Tom Fahey, Kent Crayford, and Floyd Jones.
Morning.
Morning, Mayor Hill, Council. I represent Precision Cast Parts, basically Portland's last and only remaining Fortune 500 company that actually is doing business here.
Just put your name in the record, Tyson.
Tyson Terhar? Yes. So the big thing for us is, you know, since basically year 2000, we've had a 134% blended rate increase associated with water and sewer for us. So you think about that, from 2000 today, we're paying 224% more for what we've used in the past. So, you know, just put that in perspective, you know, we're not a normal household bill that's in the mid-70s or $80 range. You know, we run, you know, fairly regular between $220,000 and $300,000 worth of water that we run through our factory in a day. So one of the biggest things for us is, you know, we employ roughly 2,300 working wage jobs for the city of Portland. You know, we are a commodity business, really. The market sets what our prices are for our products that we produce out of our company, and increases of, you know, even 3 or 4 or 8 were, you know, some of the proposed increases are dramatically impact our ability to be profitable as far as the company goes. So, you know, realistically for us, even a few percent increase, you know, with the proposed increases from 2014 to 2018 represents about a $4.6 million increase in our costs. You know, and if you really break that out as far as working wage jobs for us, that represents about 79 jobs for the city of Portland that it represents for us. So the biggest thing for us is we're asking for actually a rate reduction instead of an increase, as we have since, you know, 2000, of fairly substantial increases. You know, how you guys do that through your budgeting cycle, you know, it's either, you know, elimination of all non-mission critical capital and other expenditures, you know, further vacancy eliminations or staffing reductions, as well as cancel any other non-mission critical spending. So we ask that of the council to consider, and to going forward is to making the changes necessary to reduce them for us going forward.
Thank you. Well, we appreciate you being here, and want to continue to get suggestions from you and others about further ways we could reduce those costs. Thanks. Morning.
Morning. My name's Tom Fahey. I'm Vice President of Human Resources at Siltronic Corporation, and we're a silicon wafer manufacturer here right on Front Avenue in Northwest Portland. We are the largest water user within the city, so we're the largest customer. And I certainly agree with the statement from my colleague here at Precision Cast Parts that since the year 2000, for example, we've seen a staggering 138% rate increase for our water. Over the same period, we've worked to conserve this precious renewable resource by reducing our consumption by 24%. But still, in the year 2011, our combined cost for water and sewer was $4.2 million in that 1 year. Over the course of the last 33 years of our operation here in Portland, silicon wafers have become a commodity product, so we share that same experience at Precision Cast Parts. It started off as a high-tech product 33 years ago, very much customized, but has become a commodity over those years. As such, we compete globally on price. That's what a commodity product is all about. It all competes on price. And any price-sensitive commodity manufacturer works continually to reduce these kinds of fixed costs we're talking about today to be competitive. That's how we stay in business. And utility costs are a huge component of those fixed costs that we have. Last year, our parent company told us that we had to close one of our two plants here in Portland. We had to let go 380 living wage jobs. The majority of those jobs only required a high school diploma. Those are very, very hard to replace here in the city of Portland. Despite our efforts to keep this operation working as efficiently as possible, the continuing rate increases for sewer and water were a large factor in those jobs going to other places in the world. Over the life cycle of that plant that was closed, the payroll was $800 million. I'm not sure where you're going to find a replacement for that, those 380 jobs here in the city. Those jobs, I'll point out, had paid sick leave. They had paid vacation. They had 401k, and they had a pension plan. You're not going to find that very often for high school graduates these days. So I just want to point out that, in my mind, that creates a certain double jeopardy, I've called it, for our employees, because their jobs are in jeopardy with these kind of continual rate increases. And yet they go home at night, and they get a rate increase at home, too. So there's a certain double jeopardy that's not fair there. And Commissioner Novick, I believe you've called this an equity issue in the past. We agree completely. And we'd like to see this kind of long-term reform, I'll call it. And in what you mentioned, Commissioner, about some sort of a third-party commission to overview that, we agree with wholeheartedly. And we'd like to see that put in place. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for being here. Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Kent Crayford. I'm the director of the Portland Water Users Coalition. We're a group of 17 large industrial water and sewer customers. We have some specific recommendations that I've shared with you about the water proposed water and sewer budgets. I first just wanted to put Portland's water and sewer rates in context, though. You heard presentations from the administrators for BES and the Water Bureau about where Portland stacks up against mostly regional rivals. I want to draw your attention to a trade journal called American Water Intelligence, which does an annual tariff survey of the 50 largest cities in the United States. And on their survey, Portland has the third highest wastewater tariff and the eighth highest water tariff. We have higher water rates now than Phoenix, Arizona. Mm-hmm. As my colleague said, the water and sewer rates have increased 133% and 147% respectively since 2000. The original proposed budgets that the bureaus came to council with in January had a proposed sewer rate increase over 5 years of 26% compounded and a water rate increase of 66% compounded over 5 years. We understand that under your proposed budget, Mayor, the water rate could be curbed to 44%, and that's a step in the right direction. But the message I wanted to deliver today is that we really need larger and more sweeping reforms. I think we're at a tipping point, and you know, once the camel's back is broken, there's no amount of hairs that you can throw off of it to cure it. And I think what we really need to do is take a big step back, as Tyson had suggested. A lot of the expenditures that you're shifting from BES and water over to the general fund make perfect sense. We should have been doing that a long time ago, and we appreciate the effort. But make no mistake, we've been spending money on those projects illegally anyway. So righting a wrong is not necessarily you know, solving our water and sewer problem. What we need to do is go further, look at the bigger structural costs. We point out, for instance, the Water Bureau has about 125 employees more than it's had historically. It's way overstaffed. The reductions that you're seeing in this budget are good news, but they really don't go far enough. You asked, there was questions about the vacancies. We're concerned about vacant positions that are still funded and yet in the budget. So we also are willing to work with you to identify these costs, but we really encourage you to look bigger. We need to be cutting with an axe, not a scalpel. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Floyd Jones. I represent the Friends of the Reservoirs. And Mayor Hales, when you ran for office, you said that you were going to lower utility rates and that you supported preserving Portland's historic open reservoirs. The Friends of the Reservoirs have offered many specific budget recommendations that, if followed, would set a better long-term course for the Portland Water Bureau and for Portland ratepayers. More affordable water bills and preservation of the many benefits of our grand open reservoir water system. Ratepayers expect significant budget cuts this year with commensurate savings for ratepayers. The Water Bureau should be directed through budget cuts to focus on basic system maintenance, not new construction. Struggling individuals and families simply cannot afford the burden of the nearly $900 million debt load projected by 2018. A thorough review of the Oregon Health Authority's denial of onerous reservoir projects that will provide no measurable public health benefit finds no basis, no legitimate basis for denial. Much, if not all, of the health authority commentary is irrelevant, irrational, or misleading. As Rochester's mayor has said, and Portland can say with even greater confidence, given Portland's participation in sound science statistically significant open reservoir study, there has never been any public health problems associated with Portland's open reservoirs. As a matter of fact, all storage facility public health problems have been with covered storage, all. There is no scientific documentation of any difference in public health risk between open and covered reservoirs. Officially, federal legislative relief for Portland's open reservoirs has been a top city priority. It's time to finally put some muscle behind federal legislative relief. Portland ratepayers alone, your constituents, will be paying for $40 million in open reservoir upgrades until the year 2030. These were designed to keep the reservoirs operating safely until 2050. The majority of this expense, $23 million, was spent between 2007 and 2011. While some of us might not be here in 2050, we will still be here in 2030. We expect the open reservoirs to be functioning then as well. Everyone knows that Portland's water is very safe. That's why so many diverse organizations support retaining the functionality of Portland's open reservoirs. Make federal legislative relief for Portland's open reservoirs a true city priority, and please lower our water and sewer bills this year.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
We have three more people, Dee White, Tom Keenan, and Michael Morgan. And we've also had a request from one more person who would like to speak. Okay, okay. Marianne Schwab, you want to come on up? That's Dee White, Tom Keenan, Michael Morgan, and Marianne Schwab.
Morning.
Hi.
Welcome. Great.
My name is Dee White, and I've lived in Portland for 27 years. And like many thousands of residents of Portland, I've been hit hard by the recession. My income has steadily dropped over the past 7 or 8 years. And my utility bills, my water and sewer bill is the highest, by far, the highest utility bill I pay. It's higher than my gas and electricity combined on a month-to-month basis. The main reason I'm here, I wrote you a letter last week, Mayor Hales, and I'm just going to recap kind of what I said. When I see the capital improvement, $123 million for capital improvements, I feel like there's a lot of capital improvements that are being made that do not need to be made. We do not have a good reason for them. And I've been talking, we've all been talking about this for so long, businesses, organizations, individuals. Right now, today, I think that there are two things that y'all could do. Stop the construction of buried storage up on Kelly Butte. It's a massive project. I don't know if anyone's driven by it, but it's this massive project. It's going to cost hundreds of tens of millions of dollars, and it does not. The only reason that it's being built is for increased water supply, water storage, because the demand is going up. But we all know that demand is going down. It's been going down. Our wholesale customers are leaving us in droves because they can find water cheaper. They're trying to find cheaper water. So the Kelly Butte and Powell Butte as well, we do not need that extra storage. It's ridiculous, and the reasons that are given are not true. And so the second thing is to stop the forward motion on decommissioning our open reservoirs. David Schaff said that the decommissioning, there was any part of that in the rate increase. Well, I know we gave a contract for a consultant built into the Powell Butte bond thing that we did last year for a consultant for decommissioning the reservoir. So it is part. It is just adding more money to the debt load for something that we don't need to be doing. That's all I have to say. I just feel like we need to stop these capital projects. It's just doing nothing but adding to the debt load. We're not paying as we go, and we don't need more storage. We don't need to wreck a beautiful, elegant asset such as our open reservoirs and our delivery system, sustainable delivery system from Bull Run. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Morning.
Morning, Mayor, Commissioners. Tom Keenan, Portland Bottling. I'm going to speak from the heart today. I've talked here many hearings before about this issue. You've got a boondoggle. It's been run badly. It's still being run badly. You're laying off police. You're laying off fire. You're not able to take care of Buckman. You're laying off. All you got to do is run the Water Bureau better. Mm-hmm. You've got money to handle all these other things. I just don't get it. It's really that simple. It's 125 more employees with the water use been going down for 20 years. I mean, really, it's mind boggling to me, and I can't improve on all the testimony prior. It's just so simple. You've got a badly run bureau. It needs to change. It needs to change now. And there is absolutely no reason to have an increase. Why do they need a new headquarters building? I mean, come on. Has anyone been there? It's a beautiful building. It's there. It's fine. They don't need 125 more people. It's just so simple. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
I'm Michael Morgan, and I live in Portland. And I'm here to ask you not to raise the water rate and to halt the uncovered reservoir disconnection activities and keep the reservoirs functional, which would preserve the opportunity to continue to use them. I ask that you work with our congressional delegation to obtain relief from the federal LT2 rule uncovered finished drinking water reservoir treat or cover requirement. It is an outdated cookie cutter rule designed to protect us from Cryptosporidium, Giardia, and viruses that are not a problem in our water system and is being reviewed. The Environmental Protection Agency review of the LT2 rule, scheduled to be complete in 2016, and the persistence of New York City in changing the rule increases the probability we will ultimately be allowed to continue to use our uncovered reservoirs. Even Lisa Jackson, in her letter to Charles Schumer, said we should and can find cost-effective ways to protect the public from waterborne parasites such as Cryptosporidium. And she said different reservoirs around the country have different specific conditions and protections that may have a bearing on the public health benefits of the LT2 coverage requirement. They intend to consider innovative approaches in the review and science will drive their ultimate decision. Important reasons to be confident in our uncovered reservoirs are that our Water Bureau monitors them, and they have been used for over a century. And Dr. Gary Oxman said Portland's drinking water is superb. He said we have a wonderful water source in the Bull Run watershed, a well-designed and responsibly run system, and excellent water, and they have not detected any sign of illness associated with our water system, including environmental, chemical, bacterial, or microbial diseases, and therefore would not expect fewer illnesses if the reservoirs were covered. And Dr. Thomas Ward of Oregon Health and Science University recommended we be given the same consideration as New York City to evaluate alternative LT2 reservoir compliance options, specifically that our compliance schedule commence in 2020 and end in 2034 based on sufficient water quality data and excellent epidemiological data, specifically the testing of over 7,000 liters of water taken from the reservoirs in 2009, in which not one Cryptosporidium oocyst could be demonstrated. He said there is no scientific evidence that either source water treatment or covering or treating the open reservoirs is likely to have any demonstrable public health benefit. Multnomah County health officials said in more than two decades of monitoring, there is no evidence of a single case of drinking water-related cryptosporidiosis in the Portland area, and they worry about far more common sources of the disease that have nothing to do with drinking water, such as changing diapers, toddlers with subpar hygiene, and swimming pools. Last month and a year ago, the Oregon Health Authority denied requests for deferrals of the approved LT2 reservoir compliance schedule. The first denial letter mentions contamination incidents and the second coliform bacteria detections. In response, please read the Willamette Week, August 1, 2012 article about the coliform bacteria detection at a Washington Park reservoir last July. Dr. Oxman said no one was in any serious danger, and he would classify it as a low, low risk. Further questions and answers by experts show how very low the risk was.
You know, I need you to wrap up. You've used up your time. So.
And what an overreaction the boil water alert was, as was the draining of the reservoir. Furthermore, the LT2 rule does not cover bacteria, and protection from bacteria is done outside of LT2.
Thanks very much. You can leave us a copy of that if you could. That'd be helpful.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for coming.
Good morning, Mayor Hales and City Commissioners. Actually waiting their new bureau assignments. Me too. I understand everything's on your desk now. I can just see you playing cribbage, poker, old maid, and go fish.
Yeah.
You know. But on the serious side, I'm here to say enough is enough. These water increases are just bizarre. Enough is enough with reckless water rate spending and unrelated projects. Mm-hmm. Portland's workforce, these water rate increase is the final straw. Portland's payroll, taxpayers, Multnomah County property owners are carrying a heavy load with numerous levies, plus new payroll, arts in the schools tax, now in the courts. Least we forget, when Mayor Adams and commissioners approved spending $148 million on the CRC white paper concept over the objections of the Federal Aviation, the CRC too high, barge company saying the CRC is too low. Has anyone stopped to look to respond to Jim Howell's My Opinion piece, Rethinking the Interstate Crossing, and how to build the CRC sooner and save $1.5 billion? We're talking budgets here. And with the $2.5 billion CRC still in limbo, my fear is each of you are listening to lobbyists from contractors and developers who support WHI annexation, and it's all about family wage jobs and hire locals first. I hope each of you are also listening to those in opposition of the WHI annexation from the sovereign nations, from the Inner River Fish Commission, from the Audubon Society, the Willamette Riverkeeper, and Columbia Riverkeeper, as well as 2,500 residents. And I'll get to the point. The Port of Portland migration by installing new windows on manufactured homes, planting birds and trees to block the sound, surely they jest. I hear train whistles from Amtrak, and I live 38 blocks from the main railroad going through the city. And to my knowledge, I have yet to hear anyone express concerns over the potential loss of jobs related to the iconic salmon runs. Tourists flying into the area, deep sea fishing, Columbia River fishing, the sporting goods stores selling camping equipment, fishing equipment, tents, boats, trucks, trailers, RVs, and the retirees at home making fly hooks for fishing at their kitchen tables. Today, it appears the city bureaus are all on the mayor's desk. Early January, as of jury, I'm asking that the city council stop further work on the Mount Tabor Reservoir now and actively engage with the congressional delegation to ensure we secure permanent relief of our Bull Run water and our water rates. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Anyone else?
That's all who signed up.
Okay. Thank you. Well, this item is continued.
We have a staff come back.
Yes, please. Please. Absolutely. Sorry. Forgot to bring him back up. Could you come back, please? Questions, Dan?
So there is an item in the Portland Water Users Coalition point about the general fund reimbursement for the Rose Festival headquarters of $1.6 million and whether that was to be applied towards this year's rates.
It was. Excuse me.
So it's not in reserve.
We reflect a 0.1% reduction from the original proposed rates.
So
1/10, yes.
So the full $1.6 million was applied towards reducing rates.
Yes, it was, and we reduced our rate. It was what we referred to it as a rate benefit. It was a 0.1% rate benefit.
So the full reimbursement was applied towards rate reduction.
Yes, it wasn't all put in the first year, and I think that's what the distinction is. I haven't seen the letter, obviously, but
let's take a look at that. Spit over how many years?
The $1.6 million is a one-time resource.
Yeah.
And so our practice in the Bureau is to apply that to the capital program, which reduces the bond sales, reducing the debt service. So the debt service that was reduced yields a 0.1% rate reduction.
So what's wrong with just applying that to the operating rather than the capital, even though that's your policy?
If we apply that, then...
What would be the rate impact if we took that $1.6 million and applied it towards the operating portion of your budget?
If we applied the $1.6 million to the operating budget, there will be a significantly higher rate reduction, probably closer to 1.2%. But because it's a one-time resource, we would be looking at the subsequent year, fiscal year 14-15, would be asking for that 1.2% rate increase back on top of what would be forecasted. Again, it's a one-time resource, so you get a one-year reduction. Resource is not there to continue for the operating costs, so we would be back at adding that rate increase back in year two.
I appreciate what you're saying. I'm just saying that is somewhat conjectural. I mean, last year at this time, we were talking about a 14% water rate increase. We're now looking at a 3.6%. So I guess what I'm mulling here with my colleagues is if we took that 1.6, applied it to an operating reduction, and we'll see what happens in the next year's forecast.
Well, it's $1.6 million on top of the $11 million that I'm already cutting from the operating budget. And since that $1.6 million isn't coming back next year, then that would need to be an ongoing reduction or a commensurate increase. I mean, that's the conversation we've had before.
That's the assumption. That's the way we normally do business. But, you know, assumptions have changed here.
Well, we have a policy that we don't use one-time money for operating expenses because otherwise it does just delay the inevitable increase. So it seems to me that the applying to the capital budget and then reducing the debt service is in line with our policy of the five-year budgeting.
Well, why don't we give them an opportunity to take a look at this letter and then respond.
Yeah, and then my other question, and I should have asked this of BES too, but and I don't know if the budget office is here. I don't know why they're...
I don't think they still are.
I don't know why they're not here.
No, here
we got somebody? Oh, okay. So the bureaus and the budget office please provide us how many funded vacant positions are in your proposed budget for next year, and what are those funded vacant positions? So you don't have to answer that now, but I'd like that before.
Well, I can tell you that I have some vacancies right now that are under recruitment.
I'm not implying it's bad. I just want to know how many funded vacant positions are in the proposed budget.
I'll be able to tell you as of May 1st how many vacant positions we have.
Good. Okay.
Commissioner Salzman, all of our positions are funded, whether they're filled or vacant. So all of our vacant positions are filled. Funded.
Yeah.
No such thing as an unfunded. I guess I need to know what that is. Yeah, I want to know what that number is.
We'll tell you.
Okay. So, budget office, we can follow up. All right, let's do that. Thank you. Other questions before they leave?
Actually, Mr. Mayor, I'd just like to make a comment about the open reservoirs issue. I'd just like to make it clear that the city has repeatedly asked the federal and state governments for relief from the LT2 rule. I wrote a letter to OHA a few months ago, and OHA responded and said no relief. And I am a little puzzled that people concerned about the LT2 issue keep on bringing complaints to the city as opposed to the state. And to use a basketball analogy, if a referee makes a bad call and the coach complains and the referee tells them to sit down, usually the fans boo the referee. And I encourage people concerned about this issue to please boo the referee, not the coach.
Thanks. Okay. This passes the second reading and will be subject to the hearing tomorrow night, of course. Now let's move to regular agenda.
Item 441, amend the fire and police disability, retirement, and death benefit plan so that the plan will retain its tax-qualified status.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Or afternoon, sorry.
Whichever it is. This ordinance amends Chapter 5 of the City Charter, which is the Fire, Police Disability Retirement and Death Benefit Plan, in order to maintain the plan's tax-qualified status. Charter Section 5403C gives the Council authority to amend the plan by ordinance in order to comply with changes in the requirements for tax qualification under the Internal Revenue Code. The current changes incorporate in the plan two provisions of the 2008 Heroes Earnings and Relief Tax Act, or HEART Act. Article 1 could potentially increase the plan's costs slightly in the rare event that an FPDR member with less than 5 years of service was called to military duty, then died on military service with a combined at least 5 years of FPDR and military service in the last tour of duty. If that were to ever happen, FPDR would then pay a non-service death benefit based on the member's FPDR service to any surviving dependent minor children or to a surviving spouse at age 55. Article 2, however, does not affect the FPDR plan because the city does not currently make differential wage payments to employees called to military service. Do you have any questions for me?
Apparently not.
Okay. I don't have a question. I just need to read what my staff has written up for me on this because I think it's delightful, and as was your presentation. And they say, this agenda item is about death and taxes, thus it is the only ordinance of which you can be certain.
Very well
done. Council must approve the changes required in this ordinance on the IRS code, and there is no financial impact. This seems very straightforward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks. Okay, anyone else that wants to testify on this item? If not, pass the second reading. And item 442.
Accept a grant in the amount of $100,000 from the Oregon Community Foundation's Penstemon Fund to make renewable energy accessible to a broader segment of Portland's community.
Oh, this is great news, especially in our current budget environment. Ms. Anderson has been adroit at getting grants for a long time for all kinds of good purposes, and including in the past on other energy fronts, as well as previous grants on solar. program. So this is a great partnership, not only with the Oregon Community Foundation, but among bureaus. So thanks for putting this together.
Great, thank you. We started this morning with some good news about reductions in solid waste, and we wanted to end on a good note for you, so we came back to tell you about some more good news. With me here today is Michael Armstrong, who you met earlier, and Andrea Jacob, who is our solar and energy efficiency program manager. And yes, we have been at this for now about 20 years, focusing on energy efficiency and solar, and having worked with Commissioner Saltzman in the past in building the Sustainable Development Office. Today we're here to celebrate a $100,000 grant to BPS from the Oregon Community Foundation. It's a great partnership that Andrea built. The partnership brings together the Parks Bureau, BPS, and residents from throughout the city to create a new financing tool for solar energy systems. Most of you are probably familiar with the work that we've done over the past 6 years or so, working with residents, working with the Energy Trust of Oregon, the Oregon Department of Energy, U.S. Department of Energy, and others. And together we've worked to make it easier to install solar on Portland homes and Portland businesses. So we've revised the code, we've made the process easier, we provide technical assistance and support neighborhood efforts. And one of those neighborhood efforts is something called Solarize Portland. And you're all familiar with this, I think. It's a program to coordinate a bulk purchase of solar panels and installation, and that helps tremendously to reduce costs. So Solarize was started by neighbors in Southeast Portland, and then it's kind of spread throughout the city. In fact, our model here in Portland has been so successful that the U.S. Department of Energy has paid for a staff person in our office for almost 2 years to basically teach other cities from around the country how to run Solarize. And so we now have it in other places in Oregon. Pendleton has, you know, Solarize. Pendleton, Salem, Westland, Lake Oswego, Hood River, Clackamas County, probably others. It's also spread to two dozen different cities throughout the United States, from Boston, New York, Richmond, Santa Barbara, Seattle, and others. And so it's been a great model, and it's one of those things where we all learn from each other. So we have a real quick something I just wanted you to look at, which is that partnerships between the city and private sector can have a huge impact. And what this map is going to show you is that back around 2001, 2002, we had about 20 solar systems in the city. And as we move this timeline, you can see we had a few sprinkling in there, another 10, another 20 every year. And all during this time, there were grants, there were incentives from the utilities, there was the ability to install a solar system, but there wasn't the information, and people didn't know how to do it, and we need to make it easy. As Andrea moves...
Are you talking about solar electric?
Yes.
And solar hot water, or just solar electric?
These are both, solar water and...
It's mostly photovoltaic, right?
Well, in the early years, it was a little bit more solar water, but now it's more photovoltaic, solar electric systems. Okay. So when you get over to, let's go around 2008-9, it begins jumping. And it begins jumping in 2009. We started up the program with the U.S. Department of Energy grant and actually $150,000 from the city's what had been funding that had gone to PDC. We saw this as an economic development opportunity to grow the solar industry. And now if you slide it all the way over to the end, we now have over 1,500 systems today, and most of those were basically in the last couple of years. So that's been a success, and that's not really what we're here to talk about, but what we learned from this is that we still had a problem, and the problem was that there were lots of people in our community who literally day after day would be calling us and say, well, I live in an apartment, or I live in a rental home, or I have trees shading my house, or I don't have enough upfront cash to buy a whole system, but I want to invest in solar, and I want to do more than just try to buy some green power on my electric bill. So we started looking for funds, and I think we've learned our lesson and decided we probably shouldn't come to the general fund to ask for money, and we went and looked for other partners. And the Oregon Community Foundation came to our aid with a $100,000 grant that you're accepting today from the what's called the Penstemon Fund from the Oregon Community Foundation. And this will allow us to install our first community solar system. And the system will be installed on the Southwest Community Center this fall. So the way that community solar works is that, well, you've probably heard of crowdfunding or crowdsourcing a site like Kickstarter. Crowdfunding is an emerging tool where people can go online to donate money for causes they care about and or to invest their personal funds into projects that mean something. So we thought about this and said, what if we took something like community energy and solar and merged it with crowdfunding, and we could call it Solar Kickstarter or something, and brought these two things together. So the foundation is giving us grant funds to build the first system at the Southwest Community Center. But their goal and ours is to raise community matching funds and to build a community solar fund so that over time we'll be able to fund more installations. And the way it'll work is that as individuals or as businesses, you can make a contribution of like $100, or you could make, let's say, a $2,000 or $3,000 loan, a zero interest loan that you would get all of that money back in 6 years. And although we want to think that this is really creative and innovative, a couple other cities have tried this. We've studied how they've done it, and it's been very successful. So we're very interested in moving this forward. We've got our first funds to build the first system. We'll have, we think it'll take us a lot less than 6 years to get enough money to keep this going. If you go online, you can see Kickstarter and others. It's an amazing process where people can kind of vote with their dollars. And in the case of the loan, and potentially large contributions, we're going to look for ways for individuals and businesses to be able to get tax credits for those donations. So exciting times. We're glad to be putting this all together. We're really excited to have Parks be our partner on this. They get a brand new solar system and lower energy bills. We get to help push the city towards a lower carbon footprint and to create jobs in the growing solar industry. So we think it's a win for everyone, and we would be happy to have you be among the first to donate and or lend your money to the cause. And so Andrea, I'm sure, can help sign you up. This is moving through very quickly. We applied for some funding just a couple months ago, and literally a couple weeks ago, we're opening the mail, and Andrea stands up with a $100,000 check from the Oregon Community Foundation. So we're really excited to have a great partner with us. They couldn't be here, and Parks was here earlier, but he had to, Mike Abate had to take off. So great partnership, and I think it's something where we're going to see this really take off.
Thanks. Great. Questions? Comments? Anyone else that wants to testify?
We thought we should keep it short at this point.
Great. No one else signed up.
This is an emergency ordinance, so let's take a roll call.
Saltzman?
Great work. And this is a very exciting concept, so I look forward to seeing it grow. Aye.
Novick.
Thanks for the two items of good news in one day. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you for the explanation as to how people can invest in this and why it's at the community center for right now. Aye.
Hales.
It's a combination of good management, good public policy, and innovation. It's really great, and of course the fact that it's on the Southwest Community Center roof, you know, makes it a special one for me. So I'm obligated to donate, even if I wasn't going to already. But that's really excellent, and also a good indication that even in the days of where almost everything is done electronically, you should still open the mail. Thank you. Aye.
Don't toss it.
Okay, one more item in the morning. What was the morning calendar? And then we will be recessed till this afternoon. So
4:43. Authorize the Bureau of Transportation to acquire certain temporary rights necessary for construction of the Southwest Spring Garden Street sidewalk infill project through the exercise of the city's eminent domain authority.
I don't know if we need a presentation on this. This is just temporary eminent domain in order to get the project built, I believe. Any questions from council before we vote on this? I don't think there's anyone.
Any objections from property owners?
Yeah, I don't think there's anyone here to testify. Have we had any objections at all?
No.
No news is good news. Okay, roll call, please.
Saltzman?
Forward to more sidewalks. Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And we are recessed till 2 p.m. I'm glad you pushed him at that one point. Yeah, well, let's look at